Welcome to Let's Just Talk with Catherine Raker, sponsored by A Private Place, Bagwell, Dan Perkins Author, Don Greco Novels, IDI Dentistry, Dr. James Butler, iMarketing, Web Design and Web Hosting, Integrated Healthcare Solutions, Pucker Urban Farms, Next Stage, Skip Kenny Barbecue, Songs and Stories for Soldiers, Ultimate Air Shuttle, and Veterans in Defense of Liberty. This is Fairfax Radio.
Hi, this is Catherine Raker of Let's Just Talk. You know, Cancer Awareness Months are important. And this time of year, we call attention to a variety of cancers, including breast, thyroid, and lung. As cancer care evolves and advances, researchers can now better treat cancer based on the genomic changes in the tumor, rather than where it originates in the body. That's why we should commemorate patients who, with all types of cancer this season. Today we have Dr. Brezzi and Nicole, and they're going to share their personal diagnosis and cancer treatment and journey. And I would love to have you explain some things about the type of cancer that she has, Dr. Brezzi.
So what Nicole has is she actually has a sarcoma that has a genetic alteration called a TRAC fusion. And this was found by sending her a piece of her tissue out from her original biopsy for what we call genomic testing. And what genomic testing does is it actually looks at the DNA level of the cancer and looks across all of the genes and says, are there any alterations in the DNA? And why that's important is sometimes when you have an alteration, that can lead to the cancer cells growing without stopping. That's what a cancer is. So she had genetic testing or genomic testing that showed that. And it's changing care because in the past we cared more about where a cancer started than what was at the base or what was underlying the cancer. And we used to direct our cancers based on was it a lung cancer, a thyroid cancer, or a breast cancer, for instance. In this case, we actually say, okay, now she has a TRAC fusion. We actually have drugs that target TRAC fusions. So now we're really going to be more interested in the fact that it's a TRAC fusion cancer than where in her body it started.
Wow. Nicole, can you tell me when you found out that you had cancer and your story, please?
Sure. So in September of 2014, I found a knot in my left thigh, and I didn't know what it was, so I went to the doctor, and after some tests, we found out it was soft tissue sarcoma. And at that point, we decided to follow the protocols that just about anybody thinks of when they think of cancer treatment, and that was going through chemotherapy and then having surgery to remove the tumor. What happened then, though, was I was in recovery after the surgery, and we found that the cancer had spread to my lungs. So now, having already exhausted the things that we could do, we were concerned about what to do next. My doctor was able to go back and look at the testing that I had done, which included a genomic testing panel on my biopsy, and then finding that I had the TRAC fusion gene mutation, look for other drugs that might be out there that would help it. And fortunately for me, there was a clinical trial starting for a drug called larotrectinib that was designed to treat the TRK fusion. So I went on the cancer treatment clinical trial in Denver. At that point, I was on oxygen. My lungs were filled with tumors. I was very sick. After 6 weeks on the drug, I was able to go horseback riding with my family. I felt so much better. And now I am currently 2 years, what they call no evidence of disease or no cancer found.
Wow, that's unbelievable. My brother-in-law, I have to share this with you, was on an experimental program, had fourth-stage lung cancer, and it was metastasized, and it's unbelievable, and he's cured right now.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Great. And I'm not alone. I mean, there's so many patients on this trial that have had similar results. It's just fabulous.
Does it can I ask this question, doctor? Does it do anything for liver cancer?
So it can do something for liver cancer if the liver cancer had a TRK fusion in it. So a lot of cancers actually in the liver started somewhere else, but at this point, we really don't care, is it in the liver now? Did it start in the liver? What we care about is what was the underlying change in the DNA that caused that cancer? And the TRK fusion is just one of many genetic alterations that we're finding, and there are many other agents in addition to larotrectinib that are targeting specific genetic mutations. So the most important thing is to get tissue tested for the genomic alterations, because there might be other targeted agents out there. It really is the future approach to cancer treatment will be to go this route to find other agents that could help.
Wow. So because a friend of mine was just diagnosed, and they went to send him home to hospice, and he said, I want a second opinion.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Is it something where you can contact someone to find the genes, the DNA? This is what we're talking about, DNA, correct?
Yes, correct. So what I would do is any patient who cannot be cured or who had surgery, was initially cured, and then it came back, any patient like that would go to the medical oncologist and actually ask for their tumor to be tested for genomic testing. And you do that by asking your medical oncologist. You say, did I have genomic testing? And if they say no, you would ask them to send it. I've had patients who were sent home or who were told, I have a patient that was on the same trial as Nicole who was told, you know, the surgeon says, I can't take it out, it's impossible to cure. And immediately the patient came to me, we did the testing, and he was told he had 3 months, and that was 3.5 years ago. So it really is anybody who's not cured, I think, should be asking their oncologist to send their tumors for genetic testing.
Right. I am definitely going to tell him. He said, I'm fighting this. And he just, couldn't believe, you know, that there wasn't any other way. He said, I want to come home and I want to go see an oncologist ASAP.
Exactly.
So this is great news. I can't wait to share this with him because he's such a wonderful person, and you just don't, you never know.
Right, and if there's no, he may not have it, but if he does have it, there might be some really great options out there, so you would always want to look.
Yeah, and they told him that he couldn't be operated on and he couldn't have chemotherapy. So does that change the situation?
Well, it may or may not mean that he's really going to be able to tolerate these new agents too. You really don't know. But it certainly is true that these agents are much more tolerated, better tolerated. And so there are patients, Nicole was so sick that, you know, she probably wouldn't have tolerated another round of chemotherapy. But she certainly can tolerate these drugs because their side effect profile is so good. So while it still may be rare in certain situations that you find a genetic alteration, because there's so many of them out there, you really should look.
Oh, that's very important. Always get a second opinion. I can't believe what's happening with what you're telling me and Nicole's telling me. My brother-in-law, it's a miracle. And he's doing so well, I can't believe it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not a death sentence anymore, is it?
No, and that's what I say all the time. That cancer doesn't mean a death sentence anymore, and that there are options out there. But you really do have to know everything you can about your cancer, and that's why the genomic testing is so very important.
Right. And does it take that long to find out, doctor, how fast does it take to get the genetic testing done?
It can take anywhere from a week to a couple of weeks, depending on, you know, the tissue and how available it is. It really is getting that biopsy sent from wherever that original surgery was or wherever the biopsy was taken. So it can be anywhere from 1 to 4 weeks, depending on how accessible that tumor is.
That's great to know. It's really changing the cancer care, the course for cancer care, isn't it?
It really is. It wouldn't change things if somebody was already cured. So if somebody had cancer, many, many patients now are cured because they're caught in an early enough stage. But I would say anybody who's not cured, whose cancer either came back or who was never able to have surgery and have it removed to start with, those patients need genomic testing because there are options and it is changing the way we approach cancers going forward.
I really believe that. And Nicole, I bet your family's really happy and you're excited about what's going on in your life. Am I right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it is really scary facing a cancer. And, you know, I'm a mom with three kids, and I look forward to seeing them graduate from high school and getting married and everything that comes with the future that I now have.
Well, I'm so excited for you. I can't believe that this is happening. It's a miracle, actually, in my mind. And where can people, Doctor, where can people get more information?
So the best place for all cancer patients to get information is from their medical oncologist. So they really should talk to their treating doctor and say, have I had genomic testing? And if not, can you please do it? Then once the testing comes back, if there is an alteration, they can either see, many times the reports themselves will have information on clinical trials, or they can go to websites for that specific alteration online.
Well, thank you so very much for joining us, and I wish you both happy holidays and success in the new year.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks,
Catherine. Thank you so much. Take care. Bye-bye.
We'll be right back after these messages. You're listening to Let's Just Talk with Catherine Raker.
Did you know that more than 100,000 Americans have a serious lung disease that very few people know about? I'm Dr. David Lederer, co-director of the New York Presbyterian Columbia University Interstitial Lung Disease Program. Idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, or IPF, is a severe, irreversible disease causing scarring of the lungs. IPF can seem similar to other diseases, so many people with IPF may be undiagnosed or misdiagnosed for years. Symptoms include a persistent dry cough, shortness of breath, and a Velcro-like crackle in the lungs, which a doctor can hear. IPF generally affects people over 50 and is slightly more common in men, with a 5-year survival rate worse than many cancers. Diagnosis is important, as treatments are now available. The Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation strongly recommends you see a pulmonologist if you experience shortness of breath that limits your ability to walk up stairs or hills, or an unexplained persistent cough lasting longer than 8 weeks. Go to pulmonaryfibrosis.org to learn more about IPF.
Two new settlements totaling $1.2 billion have been reached with Halliburton and Transocean over the Deepwater Horizon oil spill. People and/or businesses may be eligible for payments from these settlements pending in the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Louisiana. The majority of the money will go toward compensating local fishermen, as well as individuals, businesses, local governments, and other entities. If you filed a claim in the settlement with BP, you do not need to file a new claim. Your claim will automatically be considered for payment from these settlements by virtue of having participated in the settlement with BP. The settlements will not pay for any economic loss or personal injury claims. Go to GulfSpillPunitiveDamagesSettlement.com or call 1-877-940-7792. Paid for by the Halliburton and Transocean Settlement Fund.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loves sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone, for Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
Back to the show. You're listening to Let's Just Talk with Catherine Raker.
Good morning, everyone. Actually, we had a little technical problem, and we'll get that fixed. But I want to welcome you back. Happy New Year. To all of our sponsors, and one of our sponsors is with us today, Dan Perkins, and I'm very excited about what he's talking about. And on the way down here, welcome to our show, Dan. I actually
heard one of the congressmen from Florida mention he's putting up a bill to do term limits. And I'll tell you what, I think we need the Tea Party back, and I think we need to do a lot of different things to change what's going on right now. I mean, they really want to impeach this president. They don't care what they do to stop the government. What do you think we're going to do? What's the media doing to not educate the public? That's your subject today. Am I correct?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I find it, first of all, it was a pleasure to be with you. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you.
It's interesting to see we've now had one full session of the House. And articles of impeachment have been introduced. Ms. Cortez is offering legislation that will take the income tax rate up to 72%.
What?
72% in order to pay for the conversion to green energy.
Oh, yeah.
And she
needs to go back to she needs to go back to the state of New York. Seriously, 72%.
Actually, in the state of New York, when you add the new federal tax plus the city and state tax, the effective tax rate for the higher income New Yorkers is 82%.
She's nuts.
82. Then we have another congressman who has proposed legislation to abolish the Electoral College.
Yeah, I heard that. Wrong.
So, but what's interesting about the way this is reported, and as we talked about yesterday,
mm-hmm.
is that the reporters are reporting it as almost a fait accompli.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Democrats have spoken, it will happen.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not, nobody that I can find so far in looking at these articles,
mm-hmm.
nobody's talking about the constitutional process of passing the House, passing the Senate, and get it signed by the President.
Right.
Now, how a reporter could do an article on a possible increase in the tax rate to 72% and not suggest, not even suggest, that President Trump might veto it or that it would never get to the floor of the Senate,
mm-hmm.
to me is irresponsible. And it, all the things that I just talked about, whether it's impeachment, whether it's abolishing the Electoral College or raising the tax rate, the way it's reported in the press is that the Democrats are going to do this. Well, I know that Rasmussen did a study last fall about with 1,000 registered voters and their understanding of how the government works.
Mm-hmm.
And of the 1,000 people surveyed, 750 or 75% openly admitted they do not understand how the government works.
Mm-hmm.
And in a survey that was released this week, 83% of the Americans polled when asked about the government shutdown said, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
So the American people are not with the Democrats in huge numbers, yet the media is not reporting that. And the reason they're not reporting it is because it doesn't fit their agenda.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote a piece earlier this week criticizing former law professor Dershowitz when he made the comment in his article on or his interview. He said that he believed that the president should stop tweeting, and I wrote a note back in response, and I said to Professor Dershowitz and all the rest of the people who think that Donald Trump needs to stop tweeting, do they really believe that the mainstream media, which is publishing about 93% negative press on Donald Trump, will stop printing that if he stops tweeting?
Uh-uh. They'll find something else.
Well, the point in my illustration, Catherine, is that the naivete of people who don't like the president tweeting,
mm-hmm.
that don't understand that there isn't enough media out there away from the mainstream media that would do anything to support the president.
Mm-hmm.
And so with no response from the president, imagine, no response from the president, his popularity rating would drop dramatically because nobody's defending his policy other than himself.
Mm-hmm.
So I said it's crazy to think that he should stop defending his what he believes and what he wants to do for the country because it's, quote, it's not presidential.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't say on your program what the newly elected congressman, Muslim congressman, said about what they wanted to do to President Trump as part of his, quote, impeachment. But it was clearly lewd, I just think that we're seeing the House is clearly dividing itself and actually subdividing itself. I think that the radical Democrats are very already displeased with Ms. Pelosi.
Mm-hmm.
And there are about 40 in the what you would consider radical Democrats in the House. But nobody's reporting about what it is they're, why they're doing what they're doing or how they're going to do it. I mean, for example, here's the thing. One congressman, has introduced legislation that says that presidential candidates have to disclose 10 years of tax returns.
Mm-hmm.
Now, currently under the Federal Election Commission, there is really no requirement for disclosure of tax returns. But again, this is the bias of the press. Because the congressman says he wants to introduce legislation, the reporter says, well, I guess Donald Trump will have to give us his 10 years worth of tax returns. If they understood the legislative process, they would know that it has to get through the Senate, not likely, and he vetoes it. Now, anything that the president vetoes that he feels is counter to his agenda,
mm-hmm.
again, the press isn't reporting this, Catherine.
Mm-hmm.
In order for the House to override a presidential veto, they have to get 100% of the Democrats to vote for the override, and they have to convince 55 Republicans to switch to override the veto. Well, if the Republicans voted against the legislation the first time through, what makes the Democrats think that they're going to get 55 to come to their side?
Right.
So what's happened here is that the Democratic agenda is that because we control the House, we now control the government. Not true.
Not true at all.
But the press is not reporting that.
Let me ask you a question in here, okay? There's no reason why others can't be impeached besides the president. Am I correct?
Well, you can impeach Supreme Court justices. You can impeach lower court justices. I don't think you can impeach a senator or congressman. They could be censured and dismissed by the legislative
right.
body they're in by themselves.
Aren't there rules in the Congress that, like, for instance, this freshman Democrat woman, couldn't she be censored for what she said?
She could, but Nancy Pelosi yesterday, when asked about the comment, she said, quote, it's not my responsibility to monitor speech.
Right.
Now, if you're talking about
decorum
and civility, which the Democrats talked about, then yes, you're right. She should have done something, but she's not going to.
She's afraid. She's afraid.
Yes. No question.
There's no question.
Many, many times, Catherine, I think on your show, but I've been saying for the longest time, the American press is intimidated by the Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
And they are now the protected class. The mainstream media will not attack the Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why they will not attack Muslims, whether they're in Congress or whatever, is that they fear for their own lives.
Mm-hmm.
Because Muslims kill people.
That's right. I mean, radical ones do. I mean, we can't say that all Muslims do that, but radical ones.
It's interesting when I did a joint commentary with a gentleman I on regularly, a weekly on a show on another network,
mm-hmm.
and IQ Arizoli, and we did a joint commentary on why Muslims in the United States will never assimilate into the American culture.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we have cities around this nation that have become strongholds dominated by the Muslim people. And much like we have in Europe, where there are no-go zones where the government will not go into those enclaves, we have the same thing going on in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
The clear demonstration that Muslims, whether you call them radical or not, are not going to assimilate into our culture. And they're going to continue to try and change our culture to a Muslim culture, our laws away from the Constitution to Sharia law.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, there are a lot of people in this country who don't see that happening, but it is.
And if they understood what Sharia law was, especially women, especially people that are Me Too for, or Me First, whatever that organization is, they'd understand that women have no real rights as far as a lot of different things in that world. I mean, I lived in the Middle East. And let me tell you, I lived in the democratic part of the Middle East, right? But there were factions that were very scary factions that women are second or third state class citizens, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And it's scary. And I had people that were American citizens that were married to these people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they tried to leave the country, or they tried to leave them, and they had to leave their children behind or escape the country. Now,
mm-hmm.
that's pretty darn scary when you think about it, because
yep.
somebody didn't like what they had to say or do, and then that happened. So, I mean, all these different, you know, I wish some of these people that were in Congress, these new ones, would actually go and live there and be under those laws, and then maybe they would wake up, maybe?
That's a great point. The point that we made in the article,
mm-hmm.
and we're writing another joint commentary,
mm-hmm.
but the point in the article, just to put it in perspective for you,
mm-hmm.
You're either a Muslim or you're an infidel.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the law, the Sharia law says. If you're not a believer, you're an infidel. Now, IQ believes there is no such thing as a radical Muslim. There is no such thing as a moderate Muslim. We want to put that moniker on them because we have Christian religions and Jewish religions and other religions around the world that have conservative or liberal sex to them.
Mm-hmm.
Not true in the Muslim faith. And so you're either a Muslim, all in, or you're not, and you're an infidel. So the idea that it's only radicals that are involved, see, you made the point, which is a great point, we need to read the Sharia law. And in my trilogy, the first book of the trilogy,
mm-hmm.
Brotherhood of the Red Nile, A Terrorist Perspective, what I try and do in that book is begin to help the American people understand how these people hate us and why they want to kill us and destroy us. So the idea that we've heard about time and time again, why don't the moderate Muslims rise up and get rid of the radical Muslim? Because
mm-hmm.
there is no moderate Muslim. There's no space in the Quran for, quote, a moderate Muslim. Because you're either for Sharia law or you're not. And so the idea that they will do something about it, not if they're Muslim. They're not going to do it.
So on that note, we need to take a short break. And
sure.
We'd love to have people call in at 513-579-1160. Are you giving a book away?
Am I giving a book away?
Yeah.
Which one?
Whatever one you want to give. You got to read Dan's books, actually, to really understand what we're, you know, sometimes what we're talking about. But and I think sometimes you have to live overseas or be in a military situation or whatever to really comprehend what's happening in our country. And it's scary. People should be alarmed.
Right.
So, you know, they should be. So we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back. What is your website, Mr. Dan?
DanPerkins.guru, G-U-R-U.
All right, we'll be right back after these important messages.
We'll be right back after these messages. You're listening to Let's Just Talk with Catherine Raker.
Did you know that more than 100,000 Americans have a serious lung disease that very few people know about? I am Dr. David Lederer, co-director of the New York Presbyterian Columbia University Interstitial Lung Disease Program. Idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, or IPF, is a severe, irreversible disease causing scarring of the lungs. IPF can seem similar to other diseases, so many people with IPF may be undiagnosed or misdiagnosed for years. Symptoms include a persistent dry cough, shortness of breath, and a Velcro-like crackle in the lungs, which a doctor can hear. IPF generally affects people over 50 and is slightly more common in men, with a 5-year survival rate worse than many cancers. Diagnosis is important, as treatments are now available. The Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation strongly recommends you see a pulmonologist if you experience shortness of breath that limits your ability to walk up stairs or hills, or an unexplained persistent cough lasting longer than 8 weeks. Go to pulmonaryfibrosis.org to learn more about IPF.
Two new settlements totaling $1.2 billion have been reached with Halliburton and Transocean over the Deepwater Horizon oil spill. People and/or businesses may be eligible for payments from these settlements pending in the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Louisiana. The majority of the money will go toward compensating local fishermen, as well as individuals, businesses, local governments, and other entities. If you file the claim in the settlement with BP, you do not need to file a new claim. Your claim will automatically be considered for payment from these settlements by virtue of having participated in the settlement with BP. The settlements will not pay for any economic loss or personal injury claims. Go to GulfSpillPunitiveDamagesSettlement.com or call 1-877-940-7792. Paid for by the Halliburton and Transocean Settlement Fund.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loves sports, music, and youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone, for Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
Back to the show. You're listening to Let's Just Talk with Catherine Raker.
You know, last night we have our wonderful sponsor, commentator, author, artist, TV and radio personality, Dan Perkins, on our show today. And you know, Dan, when the Tea Party first formed, right, they made a difference. What happened? Did they disappear?
I think that they lost momentum because they believed they had accomplished a lot of what they wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
They were never really going to be, nor were they intended to be, a true political party as much as they were advocates for certain ways of thinking.
Mm-hmm. Is this, you know, I said a prayer last night and said, please, God, please interfere, take over, help us to get through this mess that we're in before. And I really believe that if we allow this to keep on happening, we as Americans, citizens, we will be in a socialist nation, if not already going towards that. And that's what these new Democrats that have congressmen, House of Representatives, congressmen, want.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they've ever grown up in a situation that they have any idea of what they're talking about, especially this gal from New York. I mean, she's crazy.
No. See, she declares herself to be a socialist. running under the banner of the Democratic Party. She doesn't say she's a Democrat. She's a socialist, like Bernie Sanders, as an independent running under the Democratic banner.
Right.
I think what's important to understand is that, again, this generation of socialists believes that the previous generations of socialists did it all wrong, and they know what's best to do.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that socialism has never worked, they aren't willing to acknowledge that. They would much rather say, well, that's because it was done wrong. We know how to do it right at this time. And when you hear some of the statements by these newly elected congressmen, whether they want to increase the taxes to 72% or eliminate the Electoral College or whatever, these are counter to what it is we as a nation believe. But they believe that they are the future of the country as opposed to the more traditional approach.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to be these next 2 years, actually less than 2 years, Catherine, because I don't think that the Democrats understand that the presidential primaries for the general election of 2020 are going to actually start. I think California is going to start even later this year, and Maine is thinking about starting its first primary before the end of the year. They're not sure yet. The point is that they've only got a short window. They've got less than a year to make an impression on the American people that their agenda is for them. And my guess is, given the rhetoric that's come out in the first full day of the session, we want to pass all this legislation that's going to enable them to bring about change. I think that the American people, by and large, are going to reject that legislation, and the Congress may pass it, but the Senate will not pass it, and the President won't sign it. So their agenda is going to get stalled, and as soon as they see that their agenda is stalled, look for them to become even more radical, more radical. And I think that they will alienate more and more of the country so that the 2020 election will be more like what happened to Walter Mondale. And Nancy Pelosi will be out of a job, and a lot of liberal Democrats, socialists, will be out of a job.
There was a thing on Facebook on how much senators make per year. Is it $193,000 a year?
Right.
Okay. So you figure that it's $193,000 a year times how many years she's been in? No?
174 normally. She's been there for 30 years and she's making $193,000.
It's usually 174, but since she's been in there so long, much longer, my producer told me that she gets more money, 193. That's what it is.
She also gets more money because she's Speaker of the House.
She's Speaker of the House, right. So they get that after they leave, too, for the rest of their lives. Am I correct?
Yes. They have what is called a defined benefit pension.
Right. So that's a lot of money, right?
Mm-hmm.
That we
sure.
could be saving. And why do we want to keep these same people in office? What can we do to change things as American citizens to make it the way we have voted to change things? Why would we want to increase our tax situation at this point? We only have 2 minutes left, so let's do it quickly, okay?
The Democrats want to increase the taxes.
Right.
They want to use the taxes. Like they tried to do in France.
Right.
Pay for the green energy conversion.
Right.
The French people rejected
right.
it, and the French government had to walk away from it.
Right.
I think that, again, the House cannot really do anything without the cooperation of the Senate and the President. So they may want to talk about raising taxes to 70%.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just think about this for a quick second, Catherine. So the Democrats running into trouble. Can you imagine them getting on the television on the Sunday morning talk shows and say, the American people don't understand why it's good for them to pay 72% in taxes. That's what they're going to say. And they're going to be angry at the American people for not allowing the Democrats to have their way through the entire Congress and the president signing the bill.
They haven't gotten over Donald Trump winning the election. That's what this is all about.
Absolutely right. Absolutely. Right. And they're going to find a situation. I mean, here's the devastation that the Democrats are facing. So you get articles of impeachment. It only takes a simple majority of the House.
Uh-huh.
But then you have a trial. And the Senate is the jury, and it's already 53 Republicans.
Uh-huh.
And the Chief Judge of the Supreme Court, Chief Justice, is the trial judge.
Uh-huh.
Now, no president has ever been convicted into an impeachment. What happens to the Democratic Party if they impeach, they go to a trial, and they cannot convict Donald Trump? What happens to the Democratic Party?
All right, we'll be right back after these important messages.
We'll be right back after these messages. You're listening to Let's Just Talk with Catherine Raker.
Did you know that more than 100,000 Americans have a serious lung disease that very few people know about? I'm Dr. David Lederer, co-director of the New York Presbyterian Columbia University Interstitial Lung Disease Program. Idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, or IPF, is a severe, irreversible disease causing scarring of the lungs. IPF can seem similar to other diseases, so many people with IPF may be undiagnosed or misdiagnosed for years. Symptoms include a persistent dry cough, shortness of breath, and a Velcro-like crackle in the lungs, which a doctor can hear. IPF generally affects people over 50 and is slightly more common in men, with a 5-year survival rate worse than many cancers. Diagnosis is important, as treatments are now available. The Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation strongly recommends you see a pulmonologist if you experience shortness of breath that limits your ability to walk up stairs or hills, or an unexplained persistent cough lasting longer than 8 weeks. Go to pulmonaryfibrosis.org to learn more about IPF.
Two new settlements totaling $1.2 billion have been reached with Halliburton and Transocean over the Deepwater Horizon oil spill. People and or businesses may be eligible for payments from these settlements pending in the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Louisiana. The majority of the money will go toward compensating local fishermen, as well as individuals, businesses, local governments, and other entities. If you filed a claim in the settlement with BP, you do not need to file a new claim. Your claim will automatically be considered for payment from these settlements by virtue of having participated in the settlement with BP. The settlements will not pay for any economic loss or personal injury claims. Go to GulfSpillPunitiveDamagesSettlement.com or call 1-877-940-7792. Paid for by the Halliburton and Transocean Settlement Fund.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loves sports, music, and youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year, remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
Back to the show. You're listening to Let's Just Talk with Catherine Raker.
We are back with Dan Perkins, and we are talking about what's going on in the new House of Representatives and why the Democrats want to impeach the president. So, you know, they haven't gotten over the election. What are they going to try to impeach him on?
Well, see, that's the interesting, again, where the media is not communicating to the American people. The Democrats say we're going to impeach. And this particular congressman on Friday, he decided to introduce a resolution for the impeachment of Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Again, that's not how it works under the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
The Judiciary Committee of the House entertains a motion for an investigation into determination whether or not the president has committed high crimes, or they believe that he's committed high crimes and misdemeanors. And if he does, then they issue a bill of impeachment, but then goes to the floor of the House, and it takes a simple majority to pass.
Mm-hmm.
There is nobody talking about the possibility that maybe not all Democrats are going to vote for the impeachment of Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's no guarantee that if the bill of impeachment is issued by the House Judiciary Committee, that it even passes on the floor. But but setting that aside for the moment, the question is, we have all this rhetoric. We had literally the day that Donald Trump was inaugurated president, we had Maxine Waters saying impeach 45. And she said, let's impeach him now and worry about the details later. Worry about the details later. So she obviously doesn't understand the impeachment process according to the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's a great deal, this has been a great deal of rhetoric that has appealed to some portion of the Democratic base,
mm-hmm.
but I think you raise a point. What people don't understand, again, because they don't understand the government and the Constitution, can only impeach a president for high crimes and misdemeanors committed while he was president.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot impeach a president for his activities before he became president.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, what has Donald Trump done in his two-year term as president of the United States that rises to high crimes and misdemeanors for a possible impeachment?
Mm-hmm.
We have nothing from Robert Mueller. And historically, for example, in the Bill Clinton impeachment, it was Stark, Judge Stark, who provided the information to the House of lying before a grand jury and other things to create a bill of impeachment, which was passed by the House. But he hasn't delivered anything. Anybody that's involved is tangential, and none of it to do with the time while President Trump was president of the United States. So it would appear on the surface that Ken Stark does not have any information to give to the House Judiciary Committee to establish a bill of impeachment for the impeachment of the president of the United States. And
you mean Robert Mueller, not Ken Stark.
In the court for his behavior in his intimidation and badgering of witnesses to testify.
You mean Robert Mueller, not Ken Stark?
Yes, I'm sorry.
That's all right. I got to say that. So anyhow, and that's really important. People just don't understand. You know, in the end, Clinton was impeached, but nothing happened.
Oh, something did happen. Something really big happened.
Okay, tell us.
He wants to try. He was impeached.
Uh-huh.
The bill of impeachment was passed, simple majority.
Uh-huh.
The trial was held.
Uh-huh.
He was tried.
Uh-huh.
And the House of Representatives appoints the prosecutors.
Uh-huh.
The full Senate, the 100 members of the Senate, are the jury.
Uh-huh.
And Bill Clinton was not impeached. He was not removed from office.
That's
there
right.
Not a majority conviction. Now, what happened was that the Democrats won big time in the next election because the American electorate was very much in favor of Bill Clinton and
mm-hmm.
felt that the Republicans were after Bill Clinton, and therefore they reacted by throwing a bunch of Republicans out of the Congress. I think that the risk, and people have talked about this, the risk that the Democrats take with an impeachment and an impeachment trial, if they lose, the American people will throw them out. And when you look at all the other things they're trying to do, electoral college and raise the taxes and other things that they want to do, they could be under a tremendous amount of pressure. And how are they going to run in 2020 against that kind of a record? So it's a very high-risk move for Republicans, both in the House and the Senate, because there could be some really serious blowback problems for the Democrats in the general election in 2020.
Yes, and what do you think the president is going to do right now? I mean, there's this all this talk about the wall, and he's standing firm. So
yeah.
Who's going to win in this deal? Anybody?
Well, that's an interesting question. I've been through I don't know how many shutdowns in my life, a bunch, and it amazes me, and not a lot of people raise this question. We were told that on this partial shutdown, there are 380,000 people who work in the government who are classified as, quote, non-essential. If they're non-essential, why do we have them?
That's right.
And so if they're non-essential and we can't come up with a reason why they should be essential, I think that there's a couple of things happening that are going to have significant impact on this. Number one, we had a huge jobs number yesterday, over 312,000 jobs, which is almost double what the anticipation was of what it was going to be. Number two, the world is beginning to see that Donald Trump's diplomatic policy as it relates to trade tariffs in China is having adverse consequences on China and their economy. And so what I think you're going to see is that sometime by the end of the first quarter of this year, China is going to blink big time. And so they're going to take away a lot of tariffs that they're put on American goods and services currently going into the country. They've said they're going to reduce this month the tariffs from 40% to 15% on imported American cars. But see, what they finally understood is that if you just look at the raw numbers, Catherine, roughly speaking, we export to China about $100 billion a year. They import or export to us, we import from them, over $650 billion. You take a 25% tax on the $650 billion, and it's greater than the total amount of goods and services we send to China. So it's clear, it should be clear to people who study numbers, that very simply, the Chinese economy needs us more than we need the Chinese economy. The second point is, Catherine, there is no place that China can go in the world to replace the revenue generated by the United States. So they were basically betting their economy. And I think they're going to find out that they lost. And so there's going to be major changes. What that's going to mean, Catherine, is that the world's going to reaccelerate and that America's growth is going to blow past 5%. I'm on record, 4%. I'm on record last fall saying that if we get a decent trade deal with China, I would expect GDP in the third quarter of this year to be 6%. Now, everybody thinks I was crazy. Everybody thought I was crazy when I said GDP in 2018 would hit over 4%, and it did. So the point is the opening of the markets in China sends a clear message to the rest of America's trading partners, Canada, Mexico, China, Japan, South Korea, on and on and on, Europe. We're going to have different trade deals. Different trade deals means greater growth for the economy. That's going to be the most important thing. So I think what Donald Trump is going to do is he's going to continue, but he's going to focus his attention on world affairs, because the turmoil that's going to happen domestically is not going to probably allow him to get much of his agenda done unless he does it by executive order.
Yeah, and I think that's going to happen. And I think that, you know, I think that there is an answer for this wall, and it's not drones. That's only a piece of it. So I want to invite you back at least once or twice a month from now on, because I think that you bring a perspective and an educational background for people that really do not understand the government, do not understand financial situations and trade. I mean, you know, I think that if you want to be a congressman or a senator, go back to school if you don't understand the Constitution. And I think
I would
that's...
Catherine, I would add to that, reporters need to go back to basic journalism.
I agree. I agree.
I was talking to a reporter just real quick, and I said, if you don't understand the Constitution, if you don't understand how the government works, what the hell do they teach you in journalism school?
That's true.
And he couldn't answer the question.
Well, they're they do commentary, right? They think that everybody should believe, and unfortunately, they are doing a disservice to the media because they don't understand it. And the more radical that they become, the more turned off everybody wants to. We want to turn them off because they don't know what they're talking about. And I think we need to start standing up for our rights, for the Constitution. I think we should be writing or calling or emailing our senators and congressmen and saying, "Are you doing a great job or you're doing a terrible job?" And we want to see some change. And I don't think if we don't do that, we are just sheep.
We deserve what we get.
We deserve what we get. We need to make it better, so let's do it. I want to thank you so very much for what you do in your life. I mean, we are both over the age of 60, but we really care.
Some of us are over the age of 70.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But you know what? We learned the Constitution. We understand so much about the government. And you know what?
Yes.
I am never going to give the radio up. Never, never, never. I really won't because they need people like us, Dan. They really do.
Yes. So we'll talk soon.
We'll talk soon. And thank you so much for joining me today on Catherine Raker's Let's Just Talk. Don't forget to go to Dan's website at danperkins.guru and make sure you look at all of his commentary. It's awesome. Thank you so very much. And don't forget to go to letsjusttalkradio.com as well. We're on everything that you can think of today. Thank you. See you next time.
You've been listening to Let's Just Talk with Catherine Raker, sponsored by A Private Place, Bagwell, Dan Perkins Author, Don Greco Novels, IDI Dentistry, Dr. James Butler, iMarketing, Web Design and Web Hosting, Integrated Healthcare Solutions, Pucker Urban Farms, Next Stage, Skip Kenny Barbecue, Songs and Stories for Soldiers, Ultimate Air Shuttle, and Veterans in Defense of Liberty. This is Fairfax Radio.